scores! Gilmore scores! With 1:03 left!
Off the glass, to left corner to Aguila. Aguila to the left circle. Passing to Yale, a shot. Save made by Aguila. Rebound, another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts!
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg and Aaron Vickers.
All right, let's get at it. Snap out of it. It's time for this hour of Flames Talk. How are we doing on this Wednesday, January 15th? Steinberg and Aaron Vickers along with you from our Groundworks Downtown studio on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcasts. Hopefully your week's going along well. Hi, Vix.
Hi, Patrick.
The type of energy I'm looking for. Let's rock and roll.
Hopefully, let's go.
Hopefully you are having a great week, and hopefully everything is going well for you. So as we get this hour started, I sure do feel bad sometimes for Dan Vladar, like in a lot of different ways. Like, we're talking about a guy who nobody wants to see start games. Everybody gets mad when he starts games. I mean, maybe not so much Tuesday against St. Louis. That was kind of telegraphed with him being on the second half, or the Flames being rather on the second half of back-to-back, third game in four nights, so on and so forth. But, you know, over the month of November and December, anytime it was Dan Vladar getting a start, I was like, why? What? And then in a lot of his recent outings, even when he's playing really well, no goals from the team in front of him. Like, I think back to that game in Vegas where it was 0-0 until late in the second, and then it was still a 1-0 lead until, like, the latter stages of the third. He had kept the team in it. They couldn't score. They lose 3-0. And once again, Tuesday in St. Louis, Flames score one, Blues score two, and that's enough. And I thought Dan Vladar had himself a decent night. By no means am I trying to suggest that, you know, Dustin Wolf hasn't been the guy to continue to get starts, because that'd be burying your head in the sand if I were to say otherwise. But that run support difference does exist. I don't have a reason necessarily for it, but it definitely exists. And maybe there is a scientific reason for it, and I'll get it. Maybe I'll give you my hypothesis here shortly. But this season, Flames have scored 64 goals in the 23 games that Dustin Wolf has started. And in the 20 games Vladar has started, it's 46 goals. So that is a 2.8 goals per game output from the Flames when Wolf is in net, and 2.3 when Vladar's in the net. Now, it's not as drastic as maybe I thought it was going to be when I ran the numbers, but also not insignificant. Like, half a goal a game for one, or half a goal more, half a goal less, depending on how you're looking at it, isn't insignificant. If you start to isolate it a little bit more and choose more finite time periods, I went and ran a few different numbers. It doesn't fluctuate that much. Like, it's maybe a 0.6 or 0.65 difference, but generally kind of all within that range. And so, okay, reasons for it. Let's think. Well, first of all, I do think there's some bad luck involved, definitely. Second, I know a lot of people would hypothesize that maybe the team plays better in front of Wolf than they do Vladar, or more confident, mindset's more confident in front of Dustin Wolf as opposed to Vladar, where maybe there absolutely is something to that. And I also think that the spots they've chosen for Vladar play into it too. Like, he's gotten the more difficult games. The Flames look completely and utterly punchless in St. Louis Tuesday night because they were playing the third game in four nights, and the Blues play that brand of hockey, and they were very adamant about playing that brand of hockey, second half of a back-to-back, so on and so forth. So I also think that the spots they've chosen for Vladar play into it as well. So all bad luck, maybe a little or a lot more confidence from the team in front of Wolf as compared to Vladar, and the spots they've chosen. You add all those things up, Vix, and maybe that is part of why we've seen a pretty significant difference in goals per game, depending on which goalie's in net.
Well, I do believe that there's a certain level of randomness to the disparity, I guess I would say, between the offensive production for the Flames when it's in Wolf between the net, when it's Vladar between the net. I do think a lot of it is the spots that Vladar has been put in, and you kind of eloquently laid that out a little bit. Like, has there been a situation this season? It doesn't strike me off the top of my head, but has there been a season where it's been Dustin Wolf starting the second of back-to-back sets for the Flames?
That has not happened.
So automatically, you can probably, and it's not like Vladar's only getting started in the second of back-to-backs. That's not the case. Otherwise, he wouldn't have the games played that he does this season. But it's elements like that. It's the tougher competitions. It's the tougher scenarios that he faces that leads me to believe somewhat the difference in the splits from offensive production when it's Vladar versus Wolf. I don't necessarily buy so much into the, well, maybe they're more confident in front of Wolf.
I just know that that's a hypothesis I know, many would not put out there.
And I'm not saying you're one of the ones that put it out there. The reason I disagree with that notion, though, is I'm just trying to think of it from a player perspective. So if I'm playing in front of a guy that I don't fully trust, I feel like I'm more likely to cheat offensively because I'm going to know that I'm going to need that extra goal to compensate for the guy that I don't have the faith or the confidence in. And we're not seeing that from a Flames perspective. We're not seeing it from an X's and O's structural standpoint where the Flames are caught cheating the system a lot more. And we're just certainly not seeing them cheat for offense and getting rewarded for cheating for offense when Vladar's in net, because the goals for simply don't add up in that sense of where you're willing to sacrifice. I would understand it if Vladar's numbers were inflated as goals against the save percentage because you're cheating the defensive game to try and prop up the offensive game because of a lack of confidence. But we're kind of seeing the situation where you can't point to the offensive numbers when Vladar's in net and go, well, they're very clearly trying to score that extra goal or two because they believe that the guy behind them is going to allow an extra goal or two that he shouldn't. We're not necessarily seeing that from an eye test perspective. But when you run the numbers, I was like you in the sense that I'm like, I thought that split would be bigger. But at the same time, let's not undersell the fact that a half a goal a game is a sort of massive chasm to close. It just doesn't seem like you're talking about a gigantic number when you just say half a goal a game. That's still 40 goals over the course of a season, and one extra goal every half a game adds up to significant points at the end of an 82-game schedule.
That's actually, I mean, half a goal is not insignificant, right? Like, that's a decent chunk of offense over the course of a larger period of time. And when we're talking about 20 and 23 starts, well, half a goal difference. Let's just say if you go 20 and 20, because I think it would probably be still around half a goal when I ran those numbers. So quick math, that's 10 goals. That's a 10 goal difference. Is that correct math? But it's 10 goal difference.
Yeah.
And 10 goals over 20 games, that's the difference between, like, I don't know, 2 to 5 wins, depending on how things go. So, and this is by no means trying to make excuses for Vladar or trying to, you know, say that Wolf's been fortunate or anything like that. Wolf has been the better goalie. There is zero doubt about that. I just sometimes do feel bad for the other guy because it is a little bit different when you see the offense that has been produced by this team, depending on the goalie in net. I honestly, man, I think the whole idea of team plays more confident in front of the goalie, could I see that being accurate? Sure. But do I see it being a massive reason why there's that difference? No, I don't. Like, sure, it might impact it by a small bit, but I don't think it's a massive part of it. I think the two biggest things are the spots, the opponents, the difficulty level. And I think that is going to change here as we move into the second half of the season. And the second part would be, I do think there's a little bad luck that goes into it too. So I feel bad for him sometimes. And I don't think that he's going to get necessarily a opportunity to get right back in there. Cause I think I'm going, well, I know what I'm doing. I'm going Wolf for sure on Thursday, and I've got an eye to going Wolf Saturday against the Jets unless things go completely off the tracks. But even then, I think that I'm starting Dustin Wolf the next two games if I'm the Flames, because you got a nice little rest of 4 days after that. So, and I think it's time to give him, for a period of time, a little bit closer to what would be a starter's workload. So I feel bad for Dan Vladar because he's probably not going to start here for a little while. And yet, sometimes you just got to shrug your shoulders and say it is what it is, right?
Well, I'm going to try and put that half goal into perspective because you laid it out. It's 46 goals for with Vladar in net. Vladar's given up 61 this season. So again, it's 20 starts. You give him 10 extra goals in those starts. Suddenly his goals for goals against goes to 56 for 61 against. And we're talking more 50-50-ish split. So suddenly his 6-9-5 record looks a lot drastically different if you just give him a little bit more of that run support. And to your point, yeah, it's tough to see Vladar jumping back into the net Thursday against the Blues for the second of this little two-game set. Not from a he didn't play well enough to earn it standpoint. It's just the way the schedule does shake down, as you sort of mentioned, where didn't come away with the win. Like, that's just the fact. So you flip back to the other goalie. Wolf starts. There's the potential again to have Wolf start Saturday against the Winnipeg Jets. And then you don't play for another 4 or 5 days, which allows another Wolf. Like, where do you see Dan Vladar being able to get his next opportunity?
Well, the next back-to-back.
And then all of a sudden, I almost guarantee you, he'll play the second of those back-to-backs.
And you know what?
And we're back to having this exact conversation of, why can't Dan Vladar seem to find rhythm, traction, or get that run support that he hasn't? Well, it's the situational awareness.
And again, I feel bad for him. I don't think that anything should change, but I feel bad in that, you know, he was the backup to Jacob Markstrom for 3 straight seasons, and Jacob was Jacob. Like, Jacob Markstrom is a number one goalie in the NHL, and he's one of the most used goalies in the league. He's still near the top in his time in New Jersey, and obviously got the lion's share of work as a member of the Flames. And so here's the year where he's got an opportunity to fight for more playing time, and has gotten more playing time in the first half of the season, but now kind of back to the familiar role of, yeah, I think he's going to be the guy playing the second half of back-to-backs, because that's the, whether it's a 1-2 starter backup or 1A, 1B, if you're second on the depth chart, which I think it's very clear Dan is right now, yeah, you're going to see a lot of second halves of back-to-backs. That's the role. And I feel bad that it's turned into that, but like, what are the Flames supposed to do? Say, Dustin, don't play as well. Hey, Wolfie, maybe let in a few more so it's a little more even. No, Dustin Wolf has, on merit, started to take over the crease for the time being because he's been lights out and has been one of their 2-3 MVP candidates this season. And you've got NHL insiders like Frank Saravalli saying, wouldn't be out of the realm of possibility if this dude got Vezina votes at the end of the season, which I think you can see. So it is what it is, and yet you still feel bad.
Yeah, and I like the fact that you brought up the Markstrom scenario last season. I shouldn't call it a scenario, just the Markstrom fact of last season, where he is a goalie that wants to play as much as possible. And last season, based on contract, based on trade status, based on future moving forward, the Flames were that much more invested in Markstrom playing frequently than they were Vladar. You remove Markstrom from the picture in the offseason, and you have this platoon setup going into the year with Vladar and Wolf. And for very different reasons from Markstrom, you're very much invested in Dustin Wolf getting starts now, which, again, rightly or wrongly, I think most people would point to rightly, sways or tips the scale to seeing Wolf more and putting Vladar back on the back burner, kind of similarly to where he was last year.
Now, we don't know if that's going to be permanent. Again, as we talked about on whatever Monday, I think it was, I don't think it's a permanent thing. And I think that as we go forward here, if it, you know, if you start to see signs, and the Flames are going to be monitoring this very, very closely, if you start to see signs that fatigue starting to creep into Dustin's game and those types of things, then I do think you will see a little bit more of a steady diet of Vladar. And I do think that there's a chance that it goes back to a little bit more of a tandem for, like, if after 2-3 weeks of rolling Wolf out on a more frequent basis, fatigue creeps in a little bit and you got to go back to more of a tandem for a couple weeks and then swing back the other way. Like, I don't think this is necessarily a permanent thing. We'll see. But You know, right now, I think that's the way it's going to go, and I'm curious to see how Wolf handles it, of course, but I'm also curious to see how Vladar goes about his business in this situation. So, I mean, honestly, if it goes the way we're talking about, and Dustin plays Thursday, Saturday, well, then we're talking about a week and a half between starts again for Vladar.
Yep.
He plays Tuesday and then not again until the following Sunday. So that's not an easy thing to do, but that's the role as is kind of right now. And I don't have a problem with them having the roles like that for the time being.
This is going to sound really weird, but stay with me slightly, because I'll be very curious between now and February 9th, the deployment of the starts between Vladar and Wolf, because of course, as we know, there's a big 2-week break in yep. February for the Four Nations. That starts on February 9th. The Flames have 12 games remaining from Wednesday, January 15th to that February 9th date. And that 2 weeks certainly offers a lot of opportunity to recharge the batteries if you're intent on seeing if Wolf can carry that, you know, 65% start workload, whether that's going to be 8 of the 12 or however it necessarily shakes out. If he's able to get to that February 9th date just fine, coming out of that break on February 23rd, do you just pick up right where you left off and you've already got a little body of a sample size where you can look at Wolf and go, okay, well, we didn't see any drop off in his quote unquote energy level. So
yeah.
we feel comfortable yeah. coming out of that break doing the exact same thing. So it's almost like these next dozen games could actually even just be the precursor or the measuring stick, if you will, to see what Wolf might be able to handle coming out of that break.
Yeah, and in the next 12 games, two back-to-backs. Now, I don't think it'll be a 10-2 split, but if it were an 8-4 split.
8-4 is 66%.
Yeah.
I think I'm trying to do the math on my head on the fly, but
yeah.
sounds about right.
I don't think anybody among Flames fans would mind an 8-4 split.
You know, there's still going to be that 10-2 crowd. There's going to be that 12-0 crowd.
12-0 crowd. Let's
yeah.
get to the text line at 960-960. Lots on the text line. This reads, the biggest notable difference between the two goalies is rebound control. Wolf is so much better and the team's more comfortable playing in front of him. And I do think that we saw Vladar on Tuesday night, the first goal against, did come off a not so great rebound. I actually didn't mind the shot that Parayko took that beat him. It was just a really nice shot, even though it was a bad angle. I thought he was actually in decent position for it, but the fact that the rebound got kicked out to Parayko and he even had that opportunity was maybe where I'd be a little bit more critical on it. Ben in traffic says, is Wolf or Vladar seeing more high danger chances against? It's about even at 5-on-5. It's not really even the offense is skewed. The actual defensive side of things, what they're allowing in terms of slot opportunities is pretty even, not a whole lot of difference. This says, guys, I think it's the opposite. I think the Flames might be playing more defensively when Dan's in net as opposed to cheating offensively, as you say. Same from Joel and Bridlewood, who said it's the opposite, guys. They're squeezing the stick too tight with Vladar in net. They're scared to make a mistake. And I guess it's kind of exactly what I'm saying. You're playing more confident in front of Wolf and less confident in front of Vladar could be a part of it. So I don't know if it's the opposite, because that's kind of exactly what I'm saying, that you a little bit more loose, a little bit more comfortable when one guy's in net compared to the other.
That might just be me referring to, if I feel less confident in the guy behind me, I'm going to cheat to generate more offense, where I think the texters are suggesting the opposite.
Oh,
if you don't
I
feel confident,
to you.
You're
okay.
going to cheat defensively in order to try and prevent those opportunities, which is basically sacrificing the offense to sell out on defense.
I might side with the texters on that one.
You can. I'm not sitting here hard and fast banging the table on that theory. I'm not going to lie.
This reads, half a goal per game is a massive difference when the team's only scoring 2-3 goals as well. Very good point. This says half a goal is a lot when you score like no goals. That comes from Francesca. John says, Vladdy's not a top-tier goalie, so fans should hope he gives the team a chance to win most nights, and he has. And I think that that's probably fair. There haven't been a lot of nights where I came away saying Vladar was the principal reason why they've lost, but I also haven't come away from 43 games saying Vladar's outplayed Wolf, because that's not the case.
No.
Wolf has been the better guy.
That'd be a tough sell, that argument.
Mick says Pittsburgh and Philadelphia both need goalies. Send Vladar and get an asset. This says, I think the Flames need to score more than one or two goals a game in front of Vladar. That's kind of what we're talking about. This says, Pat, Aaron, great discussion. Thank you. One comment I have on Aaron's point of players taking extra chances on offense when they're not confident in their goaltender. In my experience, I find it to be much more the opposite reaction when players don't have confidence in their goaltender. Players will tend to play on their heels, not on their toes, and try too hard to prevent instead of create. Just a thought from Bubba. I should have also included the recent example of Colorado. I'd be curious what their goals per game was with Georgiev and Anonin versus goals per game with Blackwood and to a lesser extent Wedgwood. That's the text line at 960-960. What did you think of Vladar specifically on Tuesday in St. Louis?
I thought he was fine. I thought he was really good in that second period. I think he gave them an opportunity to win. When you're relegated, if you will, I don't want to call it a backup role, because you still look at the splits and it's 23-20, so it's not a full-on starter versus backup situation. But when you're thrown in, as you mentioned, the situation, the fact that he's facing another back-to-back that I believe it was 3-4, did you mention? So yep. you're not being put in ideal situations to succeed. And the fact that the Flames came away with 0 out of 2 points against St. Louis on Tuesday night, I don't think that that's a Vladar finger point.
No.
That's the five guys at any given time in front of him more than the goalie. All you can do is ask for your goalie to give you a shot, and I think he did more than that.
You know, I didn't love the rebound on the 1-0 goal, but the Flames tied it, and honestly, had the Flames been blank last night,
It felt like that's what it was going to be.
It wouldn't have been a surprise if they were. And good on Kevin Ball. I really liked the decision he made. Fake the slap shot, pump fake, change the angle a little bit, and then beat Jordan Binnington clean. But you had to beat Binnington clean last night because nobody was in his face. Like, that was the easiest Jordan Binnington start of the season, I would imagine, because the Flames were pretty punchless. Like, there was that. And I know this team has struggled to generate offense for most of the season. Well, that was one of the nights where it was reared its ugly head the most. 4 slot shots all night. 4 slot opportunities.
Ooh.
One of them came 6-on-5. 0 of them came on the power play. And then 1 each at 5-on-5 in each period. And there was nothing. Even their medium danger chances were pretty low. Like, there was nothing on Tuesday night. And honestly, I love it that players don't ever use it as an excuse. You know, guys were asked after the game about fatigue, 3-4 back-to-back, and they didn't use it as an excuse, and that's what you want to hear. But as Mike Keenan always said, yeah, they're not excuses, they're reasons. And that looked like a tired, out-of-gas hockey team, and they just didn't have a whole lot. And it showed, because they didn't generate a whole lot at all. I still thought the effort was there. I still thought structurally, defensively, they played well, but just nothing in terms of that offense, because it just looked like a pretty tired group. And it is what it is. Every team goes through it. Every team over 82 games has rough stretches of their schedule, and this is one of them for Calgary. Like, this is a grueling week with 4-6, which is why getting those 2 points in Chicago and doing it pretty easily without breaking much of a sweat was, I think, really important. And I think they've got a great opportunity to bounce back, because nothing about the Blues really impressed me. So I think the Flames have got a great opportunity to split this on Thursday night. But yeah, there wasn't much there. And that those games happen. And when you're a team that doesn't generate a ton of offense to begin with, and then you're playing out of gas, you're going to have nights like that, I think.
It felt like it was going to be a 2-0 St. Louis win, with the second goal coming as an empty netter, to be perfectly honest. It was low event hockey all the way around. If you're the Flames playing the second of back-to-backs on the road, it wasn't a bad road formula per se. Would you have liked to be on the inside a whole lot more than you were? Absolutely. You understand why they weren't, for a lot of the reasons you suggested. Also, structurally, the Blues played very well defensively as well, so I will give a little hat tip to that. But seeing this team again Thursday night shouldn't really scare the Calgary Flames. It shouldn't scare the fan base. It shouldn't be like, oh no, we're going to lose 4 points in this two-game set to the St. Louis Blues. And
they
might, but yeah. it shouldn't be a, oh, how are we ever going to... It's not like you're playing Winnipeg back-to-back now.
Yeah.
It's St. Louis. They didn't necessarily do anything that should scare, startle, or, again, outside of trying to get to the center of the ice a bit more, change your game plan if you're the Flames.
I think Brett is a troll or an Oilers fan, because this is Brett's text. Can you imagine the haul they'd get if they traded Wolf? I think he's too small and would trade him and you would get a big return. That feels like an Oilers fan.
Well, if he's too small, why would you get a big return for
him? It's a 780. I see what you did there. It's a 780 area code.
I didn't do that intentionally.
So
happy coincidence.
I think there's a decent chance that Brett's trolling.
Eh.
Can we? And if he's not,
we're done with that.
If
though,
he's
right?
not trolling, we have to be done with. He's too small. Yeah. The guy has been a top 10, at worst, top half goaltender in the NHL this year. You don't be one of the top 15 goalies on the planet in the greatest league in the world if you're too small. Like if Dustin Wolf was truly too small to play in the NHL. It would have been very apparent by now.
I mean, you'd think that shooters would have exposed him at this point. But the fact that he thinks the game so well, the fact that he moves laterally, I should say north-south as well, because him going out and coming back is elite too. But his sense, his ability to fight through traffic, and his skating ability are all elite qualities. Not just elite for a 23-year-old, elite for an NHL goalie.
Justin says... Gents, they're one groin pull away from having Vladar and Ignatiev leading their playoff charge. They need Vladar right now. I'm not a big proponent of trading Vladar, and I know Mick talked about Philly and Pittsburgh needing goalies. I'm not a massive proponent of trading Vladar right now, because I do think he's better suited to be in the spot he's in than Cooley is for a few different reasons. And Cooley's a little banged up right now. But I don't think it's going to be too long out of
he's
the lineup
day-to-day
for him.
Now, I think, officially.
Is it now officially day-to-day? Got banged up on Friday night in Colorado. Left that game. Didn't play on Saturday. Didn't play Tuesday night. And I don't think he's going to dress for this game against Tucson on Wednesday either. But Cooley, it's not a long-term injury. So I think you want Cooley playing as much as you can. And if this is going to be a tandem in the NHL or even... not a stretch where Wolf's going to get a lot of time. I think Vladar's better suited right now to kind of be that 1B guy. And also, he's got more experience. He's been the guy who has played these situations before. He's kind of used to it. So I have no problem. I do not think it's poor asset management, if you will, if the Flames go through the season, don't re-sign Vladar, shake his hand and say, hey, thanks for like a great half decade. You've given us great service, awesome guy, and good luck in free agency. If that happens, that's not poor asset management. They gave up a third-round pick for a guy who was an everyday member of their team for a half decade, four or five seasons, whatever it is. I got no problem with that. I don't think there's any urgency to trade him, because I do think having him is a little bit more of a safety net right now than Cooley. And then next year, it opens the door to have Wolf and Cooley as your tandem when Cooley's one-way contract kicks in.
And just on the asset management portion of that, what's he returning you right now? Like, we're not talking about you passing on getting a first-round pick in return. I'd raise an eyebrow, if you will, if he were to return a second even at this stage. So if we're talking about a third or a fourth-round pick versus keeping him on and making sure you're de facto number one next season is comfortable for the remaining month and a half of the season. There's some value in that too.
Derek writes, time to trade Kerins. His points per game average is impressive and we can get so much for him.
What are we talking about? It just dropped in half.
No, that was all sarcasm, by the way.
I know.
This Brett wrote back, I'm not trolling you. Big Flames fan. I just don't have much faith in Wolf long-term. Oof.
What else does he need to show you?
What has this guy done other than be less tall than Jacob Markstrom? What has this guy done to make it so that you're like, yeah, I don't have faith in this guy? I don't understand. Like, what are we watching? What about his game They're like, nah, don't have faith.
Once the opposition realizes he's only 6-ish foot, they're going to be sniping over his shoulders. So like, come on, there's pre-scout on every single goaltender in the NHL. Every member of the opposition knows exactly how big or how small every goalie is that they're playing against. Yeah. This isn't a surprise season, if you will, where nobody's ever heard of video before, and this is the first time they've ever laid eyes on Dustin Wolf.
What? I won't read that one, although it was funny, Wedley. Chris says Vladar's not a 1B. He's a backup, has been, and will be. Maybe so. But can we go back to what has Wolf shown them? Like, what about Wolf? Has you thinking that he's not, like, you don't have faith in him? I don't. And difference of opinions are fully allowed. Everybody's entitled to their opinions. I'm just having a hard time wrapping my head around that one, only because, I don't know, maybe I'm falling into the trap. Maybe I'm not, but this guy's giving me franchise goalie vibes the way that he goes about his business.
I just don't know what Wolf would have had to show, or maybe you just need to double the sample size for that texter to be a lot more confident in the future of the Calgary Flames goaltender.
Yeah. This says, Pat, it's only been 23 games Wolf's played, and he's been shielded against good competition and mostly home games. I think that that's going to change, and we'll get a better indication. And I do think that we're going to see him play against better teams going forward. This reads, Wolf's stats are jaded. He's better against non-playoff teams than higher echelon teams this year. He'll cave the second half of the season. That feels like somebody who's that sounds like somebody that is not in love with Wolf. And finally, Dale writes, Pat, absolutely disagree. If you can only get a 6th-round pick for Vladar, sure, let him stay. I'd even consider a 5th as poor asset management if you let him walk. And definitely, if you can get a 4th-rounder, don't let him walk. I don't know if you're getting any of... I don't think you're getting much more than a later-round pick as it stands right now.
No, I can't imagine. With what we know about the trade market for goalies over the course of the last decade versus... And he has been used... roughly, but I don't know necessarily what a goaltender of Vladar's cut, where we're talking about an 889 save percentage and a 303 goals against, is going to fetch you in advance of or around the trade deadline.
Jay and Garrison Green, Wolf's the best thing to happen to the Flames since Kiprusoff. This says, it's Wolf's demeanor. If he acted like Markstrom last year when Markstrom was playing subpar, then yeah, I'd worry. Another Brett says, 780 Brett does not represent all Bretts with his Wolf thoughts. This says, he's the first player since Johnny that I actually say, wow, and I'm amazed with some of his plays while watching. There you go on the text line at 960-960. Steinberg Vickers, this hour of Flames Talk underway. We're coming at you from our Groundworks downtown studio, your local experts for foundation and crawl space repair.
This is Flames Talk. Join the conversation at 960-960. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
And now a Wednesday Daily Flames Roundtable brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills just minutes from the airport. He is Aaron Vickers. My name is Pat Steinberg, and now the voice of the Flames, Derek Wills, joins us to complete our Daily Flames Roundtable. Willsy, congratulations. You don't have to talk about goaltending. We will we spent the first half of the hour talking goaltending, so you get a reprieve from a rather constant topic. Instead, you get to talk about one of the other constant topics. This team's difficulty to score goals. It definitely reared its head on Tuesday night in the 2-1 loss to St. Louis. So, gents, we know that this team rarely scores more than 3 goals. We know that this team is not one of the higher scoring teams in the league. We know this is a team that it's going to be a struggle most nights to generate a lot of offense. How, now that we're into the second half of the season, third quarter of the season, how much of a priority should fixing their scoring woes be for this season, for the next 39 games or whatever we're at? How much of a priority should that be between, say, now in the end of the year or now in the trade deadline?
Well, it should be a high priority. I guess the question is, how do you fix the lack of goals? I mean, easier said than done, right? I think there are some internal fixes that can be made, potentially at least. I mean, there are a number of guys in this team who probably haven't played to expectation or produced to expectation. And Andre Kuzmenko would probably be at the top of that list. So, you know, if he could find his game and start finding his opponent's net, that certainly would be helpful. Yegor Sharangovich's game has been trending in the right direction. It was really good to see him finally get a goal and pick up an assist as well in that 5-2 victory over the Blackhawks in Chicago a few nights ago. So, you know, if he can be a stronger player or a more productive player in the second half of the season, that certainly would help. And there are some other guys in this roster who I think have a little bit more to give offensively. Taking it in a bit different direction, I guess you could add between now and the trade deadline, but a lot of teams are looking for guys who can help them create some more offense and score some more goals. So easier said than done. And as we've discussed at length, I don't think the Flames are going to be in the rental market. Will they be in the market to try to improve their team? Yeah, I think Craig Conroy has been and will continue to look for ways to do that. And if he can find the right player in the right age range for the right price, then I think he'd love to bring someone in to potentially play in his top nine. And if that guy is a right-handed centerman, better yet. But I think easier said than done. I do think there are some guys who can score some more. And if they do that in the back half of the season, that helps. And we'll have to wait and see what Conroy does if he decides to go get this team some help.
Yeah, from my perspective, I don't know how keen I would be if I'm sitting in Craig Conroy's chair to try to rectify this situation externally. And as Willsy pointed out, there are several players on the roster as it stands right now that probably could help you with your goal scoring woes. I was actually surprised to just pull up the sheet now and see that there's only four players that have hit double digits in goals for the Flames this season, including Connor Zary, who I don't think we're going to see anytime soon. So you run through the list of players that you think you could probably squeeze a little bit more offense out of. You got Blake Coleman at 9, Sharangovich at 7, Rasmus Anderson and Mackenzie Weegar at 6 and 5 respectively. I just don't do anything that would deviate from my own plan as it stands right now, where you go externally to the market and you're sacrificing whatever it happens to be, whether it's a pick, whether it's a prospect, to try and cure the lack of scoring now. That's deviating from the plan that you've set out if you're Craig Conroy, and that's something I don't look to actively address. Now, if an actual hockey trade comes my way that will help in this regard, and it fits my age range, it fits my salary structure, it fits everything I'm trying to do in terms of this retool, then that's a little bit of a different story. But I don't go into the trade deadline going, oh, you know, we're one of the lower scoring teams that are still in contention for a playoff spot. I better go sacrifice my second round pick or a third round pick and try and bolster this to help our chances. I think that's the wrong way to go about it. I look internally with the guys we've got. I look internally with the guys that would be in the minors, but I don't go out of my way to address this that in any sort of way, shape, or form that would take me off the plan that we're currently on.
Yeah, and I think we're all probably in agreement on that front. And honestly, I don't know how realistic it is that between now and the trade deadline, that impact right-handed shooting 23-year-old centerman is truly available. Like, I don't. It's very rare for that to get moved in season, and I just, with the prices that you hear that teams are asking for a Pinto or a Cousins or other names like that, I don't know. I'm not holding my breath that they're going to be able to make that trade. And if they do, good on them. That's exactly what they're looking for. But otherwise, I think it's important to just continue to stay with it, because outside of that type of player, I don't know if one or two players is really going to impact things that much, because part of why this team struggles to score is personnel-wise, but also it's the brand of hockey they play, because they know that they don't have those offensive superstars. And at no point between now and the end of the season do I think they're going to find an additional offensive superstar. And if they do, great. Elias Pettersson, let's have that conversation. Dylan Cousins, amazing. Let's have that conversation. But like, outside of that, which doesn't seem overly realistic, I don't know if anybody that you would get on the trade market is going to drastically change it that much. So I think you kind of got to get used to guys that and hope that Willsie, kind of what you're talking about, is the way that it does improve somewhat, that, you know, Sharangovich does start to score more often, and then maybe his goal against Chicago opens the floodgates a little bit. And if Andre Kuzmenko plays again in a regular fashion, that maybe offensively he can start contributing a little bit more. And that, you know, when Connor Zary comes back, he continues to be the same guy he was prior to the knee injury. And Matt Coronato continues to generate offense, and maybe there's a slight uptick there. Like, to me, that's how you see a slight improvement, is internally, as opposed to, I just don't know if there is anything realistic that would exist externally that is going to make that much of a difference.
Yeah, there are a few teams that I wonder about, though. I mean, you mentioned Elias Pettersson. If the Canucks continue to struggle, and if that drama between him and JT Miller doesn't go away, and I can't imagine it's going to at this point, because it's been going on for a long time, I do wonder if Jim Rutherford and Patrick Alvin are pressured into doing something. And maybe that would mean opening the door for a conversation with Craig Conroy on Elias Pettersson. I don't think that the Flames would be the Canucks' preferred trade partner, but the Flames have lots of salary cap space. They've got lots of picks and prospects, and I could certainly see them having the assets to make that deal. I wonder about the Rangers. It sure sounds like they're going to continue to tear things down there. Does someone pop free that would be of interest to the Flames? Alexi Lafreniere would be an interesting guy if they made him available. And I wonder about the Sabres and some other teams as well. But I do think that there are some internal fixes. We talked about Kuzmenko, if he plays again. Sharangovich, his game is, I think, getting there. And the other thing I would add, guys, the Flames could use some more offense from their defense. So going into last night's game against the Blues, the Flames were tied for third fewest points by defensemen this season. And I know they don't have Noah Hanifin anymore. And you know, Chris Tanev wasn't a big point producer. Nikita Zadorov could chip in here and there. But I do think that Rasmus Anderson can produce more. I think that Mackenzie Weegar can score some more goals and get some more points. And even Jake Bean, I think he's playing well. And it was good to see him get out the Schneid a few nights ago as well. So I do think there are a bunch of things that could happen internally to take some pressure off of Dustin Wolf and Dan Vladar and put the Flames in a position where they don't have to play in all these one-goal, low-scoring games. It would be nice to get to four or more once in a while. I know that's how the guys feel.
Yep. Curious to see if this is just something that at the end of 82 games, we look back and say, yeah, the team just all year had difficulty scoring. My guess is probably that's what we're talking about. But I do wonder, the guy that I'm most curious about is Sharangovich, and if we see him maybe start to break out a little bit in the second half of the season, because I'm with you. I do think he's played much better over the last couple of weeks here. So.
Yeah, so I do wonder if there are potentially some more players with the Calgary Wranglers who could come up and chip in a little bit offensively. Right now, I don't see a spot opening up in the top nine if everybody's healthy, but could you get a bit more offense from your fourth line? I mean, it kind of feels like Walker Duehr might be on thin ice right now. Is there someone playing for the Wranglers who could come up, play in that spot? Maybe Adam Klapka, who could give you a little bit more offensively? So something else to keep an eye on.
Daily Flames Roundtable. He's Derek Wills. He's Aaron Vickers. My name is Pat Steinberg. It's a Wednesday edition of the program here on Flames Talk. Gents, is the Flames lose 2-1 to St. Louis on Tuesday night. First of two straight against the Blues at Enterprise Center in St. Louis. They play them again on Thursday, and as they go into that rematch, anything the Blues did on Tuesday that particularly impressed you, that you come away saying, oh boy, okay, that's going to be a factor again on Thursday night?
Yeah, I think they defend the front of the net really well. And it's something that Megan and I talked with Kel McClain about prior to the first of back-to-back games between these two teams. They do a really good job protecting their goaltenders, as they did with Jordan Binnington in that win last night. And it's really difficult to get to the front of their net. The defensemen are big and strong and lanky and are good at boxing out. And the Flames tried to get there. We saw Kevin Rooney get there in the third period and take a nasty cross check that somehow did not result in a Blues penalty call. But, you know, easier said than done than getting to that front of the net and at least staying there. You know, one of the things the Flames wanted to do last night, and probably will have to do a bit better job of tomorrow night, flash screens. So, yeah, it's hard to get to the front of their net and just stand there and try to take away Jordan Binnington's eyes. But, you know, you got to be fast with how you play in the offensive zone, try to break up that defensive box of theirs and force those defensemen out of position and try to flash screen the goaltender by just kind of skating through the crease and get to him that way. So I think that was what impressed me most about the Blues' boring style of hockey last night, just was how good they were in front of their goaltender.
This will sort of piggyback Wilsey's point, and I don't necessarily need to go too long on it because he did a good job illustrating it, but it was just owning the middle of the ice in general, where everything seemed to be forced to the outside with the St. Louis Blues. It's easy to do when you have a bunch of 6'3" to 6'5" defensemen that can still be mobile and sort of dictate where the forwards are going to be finding available ice, and it just so happens to be the outside. But to your point, Pat, about, okay, where did the high danger chances come from? Where did the slot opportunities go for the Calgary Flames? Well, it was just eaten up by the defense of the St. Louis Blues. And that's even an extension a little bit of the center and the forwards with those groups as well, working as a five-man unit to keep everything to the outside. I do wonder how much it was St. Louis's ability to dictate that versus how much gas was left in the tank for the Flames playing the second of back-to-backs and the third and four nights. We'll see come Thursday, because the Flames will have a day of rest. They'll do a little bit of a light morning skate, I would imagine, and they should be full reserves, good to go. So is it something that we're going to see again on Thursday where Calgary can't penetrate the middle? We'll find out. We'll see if it was the St. Louis Blues' effectiveness, whether it was the Flames' just inability to get there due to lack of gas. But if we were to pick one thing, it would be just their ability to control the middle.
Yeah, and I guess that is something they've been pretty good at all year, as you talked about, Wilsey. They're a top, just quick math, the top seven team in the NHL in terms of the way that they protect the slot area, in terms of high dangers per 60 minutes at 5-on-5. Flames are also a top-half team. They're not that much below where the Blues are, which is part of why that game on Tuesday night was as low event, and that was not.
It's not going up in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, that was a paint the barn as opposed to paint the masterpiece type hockey game for both sides. And you know, if we were to see that again on Thursday, don't think anybody would be super surprised, because neither team generates a ton offensively, and both teams are very predicated on being that group that centrally just, hey, we have got to play a brand of hockey where we don't give you much. And that's how we're going to win hockey games. And you kind of saw that. And then you add on to the fact, Wilsey, that the Flames were playing 3-4, second half of back-to-back. They'll be playing 3-4 again on Thursday, but with no travel and with a rest day in between. So I do think that that changes the paradigm a little bit. And otherwise, my answer to that question would be, yeah, that was a thing they do and do well. I don't know if it impressed me, if that's
brand.
The word that I would use, but otherwise, the St. Louis Blues, they sure are there. They sure are one of the 32 NHL teams. Like, they're like, okay, like they got 12 forwards and 6D and a goalie and a backup. Like that's okay. But where is this group going? Does anything about the St. Louis Blues scare you? And I'm not talking about the Flames even necessarily, because I'm sure lots of teams say, does anything about the Flames scare you? Like, I'm not trying to even compare them to Calgary. I'm just saying, like, if I'm any other NHL team and I've got the Blues up next, it's not like, oh boy, we got to get ready for the St. Louis Blues. Like, they are what they are. They're kind of just a middle of the road team right now. And it's kind of what they looked like on Tuesday night at Enterprise Center.
You know what impressed me in that game was Cam Fowler. I mean, here's a guy who spent, 991 games playing for the Ducks. Yeah. And that team had a lot of success early in his career and then decided to rebuild. So I'm sure it was tough on him to go through all those lows after all of those highs. But he looks like new life has been breathed into him since the trade to the Blues. I know that the Blues aren't in a great spot. They're still 3 points behind the Flames in the fight for the second wildcard spot in the Western Conference, but certainly a more competitive team than the Ducks. But the Blues are good in the back end. Colton Parayko is always good against the Flames. years, and there's a reason why he's going to represent Canada at the Four Nations Face-Off. So good team defensively, but yeah, they play a pretty boring style of hockey. So we'll see if the Flames can out-boring them tomorrow night and get a split in St. Louis.
Yeah, neither team plays a super offensively high-powered brand of hockey, that's for sure. So that will be the third and final game this regular season between the Flames and Blues on Thursday, and we will talk to you on Thursday, Willsey. Thank you, as always. Appreciate it, pal.
Okay, guys. Have a good night.
He's Derek Wills. He's Aaron Vickers. My name is Pat Steinberg, and that'll wrap us up this hour on Flames Talk, the Daily Flames Roundtable, brought to you, as always, by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills, just minutes from the airport.